This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey folks, thanks for joining us. Guess where we're at? Nope, not Chicago in our studio, but in beautiful Moscow, Russia. Yes, let me repeat that one more time. Moscow, Russia. Yes, there's baseball in Moscow. And trust me, after the couple of years what we've seen, how they're developing, they will be one of the upcoming countries in Europe. They are outstanding in what they do when it comes to training. So we are here with ISG Baseball and the Russian Baseball Federation doing the coaches conference. Over 98 coaches here over the weekend, and ISG has brought in some fantastic instructors, and we want to start off the show with our two instructors. That's what the talk's going to be about. It's going to be about Moscow, about Russian baseball, about the training that ISG has been doing here. And I think we're going to learn a lot of great things. I learned a lot in the last 3 days, wrote a lot of notes. And we're going to ask these guys some really good questions and get some great answers. And let me introduce the two guys. First of all, from the Pittsburgh Pirates, former major leaguer Corey DeHaan. He also was a manager, coach with the Pirates, and currently one of the hitting instructors in their system. And if you don't know the Pirates, you're going to, because they may not have big payrolls, but they surely got an unbelievable staff when it comes to, from the top, from president, the GM, the ownership, and all the way down to their player development. Their player development is one of the best systems in professional baseball today. No doubt about it, just from some of the things I heard this weekend. And also our second instructor with ISG, he's been on the show before. He is a high school coach and an up-and-coming high school coach, Jeffrey Darian Seiler from John Carroll High School in Maryland. He was Coach of the Year in Maryland, a young guy, but a brilliant young man, which has brought in some great stuff for ISG. So brilliant that I've had to ask him to translate some of the words that he told me this weekend. And if you know me, I'm not a man of many words, and my vocabulary is limited, so I've got to ask these guys once in a while what exactly they meant by that. But when they tell me, it's outstanding stuff, and now I understand it. So let's get into it right now. Let's welcome Jeffrey Darian Seiler and Corey DeHaan. First of all, Jeffrey, how you doing, buddy?
Great. Good to be here.
You have a good weekend?
Amazing. Yeah, it's pretty incredible to see just what they're doing here from a player development perspective. Awesome to be in Moscow, the first time here for me. The facilities and everything that they've got going on, and the passionate coaches that were here at the clinic, is pretty inspiring to see.
And of course, I'm a pretty good leader, so I organize stuff pretty good, huh?
Yeah, incredible.
It's been incredible.
The
best. Hey guys, just so you know, I haven't done much this weekend because these guys have done the workload of the coaching in the classroom, mostly on the turf in a big dome. I mean, the Russians have a dome at two fields. They're going to build on another field, and we're going to be able to talk about the development of the field, as we get into the broadcast. So we are excited about this. So let me kick in right here. Corey DeHaan, what's up, buddy?
What's up, Pete?
Hey, we never met Corey before. It's my first time. Same thing with Jeffrey. And we feel like we've known him for a long time. Just outstanding teacher. First of all, not just teacher, but outstanding person, you can tell. Recommended by our good friend, Dave Turgeon. Yeah, Dave was in Vancouver. Got to get Dave on the show. I know that for sure. He's been real busy, but recommended by him and Dave hit a grand slam, man. We enjoyed Corey big time. So how what do you think? First time in Russia? First time in Russian baseball? A little bit about what you think?
Absolutely. First, I think when I explained to others I was going to Russia, they said, "Ooh, that sounds cold."
Yeah.
And that's kind of, it's lived up to its billing. I mean, it's on the chillier side, but the people here are above and beyond kind and generous and opening and welcoming. And that's been the most fun, I think, is just to connect with some of these guys, the love and the passion they have for learning and for understanding the game of baseball.
How about that turnout? 98 coaches on the weekend. We had 77 last year. It's getting better. I mean, what did you think about the coaches?
I was really impressed, not only with the things that they taught us. I mean, it's a kind of a two-way street here, right? I mean, we're here to tell them some of the things that we're doing and drills that have worked for us and culture and team building. But to listen to some of the things that they're doing was pretty great. And you can tell by the commitment of these guys and gals to help their players. It's pretty inspiring.
Yeah, it is. The questions they ask, they're intuitive. They are smart people and they want to learn. At times, they wish there was one way to do it, which you kind of get the assumption of. But the cool part in sports is there's so many different ways to get to that end result because we work with unique individuals. And so the ultimate find is how do we connect with each of those individuals and learn what they need when they need it. And then we get the fun of applying different drills that hopefully help them feel what they need to work on.
You know, and that's what we're going to get on in with the show. We're going to talk about a minute here. I'm going to stick with Russia a little bit. But we're going to get into, you know, the game's really changing. You know, and people are saying, well, it might be going too fast. It, you know, maybe there's too many changes. But I'll tell you what, I think it's changing for the best. So we're going to get into all that stuff in a minute here. But I want to go back a little bit and stick with the Russian Baseball Federation and the coaches we've been with. I want to get an idea of what you guys been working, you know, like give us an idea, Jeffrey, what your some of the things that you've been teaching the coaches that might be new, not only to American coaches, because there's a lot of new stuff, but also to the Russian coaches.
Sure. So one of the things that I'm really passionate about is pitching. I really enjoy developing pitchers and going through a lot of the things that I've learned in training different drills or different activities for throwers. And talking about how we can really create an environment where the players are challenged to self-discover how best their body moves. So giving them the opportunity to use different types of balls, different slopes, different drills, empowering them to select what drills they want to use for that day. So giving them a lot of variety and a lot of choice and a lot of variability so that they can kind of guide, sort of in, moving away from sort of the sage on the stage kind of mentality and giving them the guide on the side kind of thing. So giving them the opportunity to self-discover and find that solution space for themselves.
And cool. that seems to be the theme, Corey, because I think in the hitting it was very similar.
Yeah, it was. Ultimately, how are you going to get your body into the best position possible to get a good swing off? And that's what the pitchers are trying to mess us up with. But it comes back to the control of your body and your movement. And there's so many different ways to get to it. But the way, just like Coach Tyler was talking about, there's different drills that guys can feel that might seem a little bit weird at the time. But it's actually supposed to be that way so that it allows your body to work in different movements. So that ultimately, once you get back into regular feeling, oh my goodness, this is going to play now.
Yeah, and what's interesting is on that, watching the Russian coaches, which I think was outstanding, was you know, you guys are doing, you're introducing some of this stuff. Some of it was new to me also, and it's been new to American coaches. And I could imagine, you know, we told them, you know, hey, you got to stick to the fundamentals. You got to do the fundamentals. We don't want to get away from those. But yet we also have to do other things, as you're saying. Give us an impression of something that you mentioned to them, a drill you showed them, something new. And because, you know, sometimes you can see the reaction like, is this baseball? You know, right? I mean, so, I mean, that's a reaction a lot of people are going to get. So let's go into that a little bit.
Sure. So I think the concept of throwing up a mound was a little bit strange to a lot of the coaches.
Right, because you're thinking, well, what are we playing? Is this a different sport?
Right. And so I think that was surprising for a lot of them. And, you know, even when I was talking about, you know, it doesn't have to be just up the mound. You can change the mound to have a different slant or to one side or the other, or you can make it even steeper of a slope, or you can throw off of a smaller slope on just one leg. Depending on what you're trying to do with your athlete.
And why are you doing that? Why? What's the purpose?
So, it basically, let's take a guy, for example, that the first move in the pitching motion should be getting into your glute and then hip hinging and moving down the slope. So, some younger guys or guys that aren't moving particularly efficiently will start to get quad dominant. And so, what you want to try to do is to have them feel what it's like to get into their glute. And so if you have them on a slope so that their toe is down and you have them, you know, go into their leg lift and start delivering the throw, it's going to feed that error of making them want to go into their quad, and if they do it, they'll fall over. And so we're trying to feed the error so that they become sort of hyper aware of what it feels like to do that, and then it allows them to kind of correct. Or, you know, you basically have to really get into your glute not to fall off of that slope. So we're trying to have them feel that, and then we'll blend that into the mound work. So, you know, a couple throws from that slope, get them to feel it, maybe a glute activation exercise off of the mound. Now we add some other variation there. So, you know, you're doing these multiple different drills, but with the same goal of trying to help him feel that glute load when you leg lift.
Outstanding. So. Hey, we got to get a little shout out to our translator, Georgie. Georgie. Hey, Georgie was great, man. We got a big shout out. He had to translate the whole weekend. And Coach Seiler doesn't know this, but we had to pay him twice every time he talked because the translation of some of the words. Yeah, so you owe some money, but he could imagine poor George. Georgie speaks very good English, but he made some. He had to translate some stuff. Sometimes was, you know, we had to laugh a little bit, but we had a good time. That's the whole thing about baseball too. With the coaches, is, you know, sometimes we got to let the Russian coaches understand that, hey, you got to, you know, Coach Corey mentioned it many times too. We have some fun too. Can't be serious 24 hours a day. Mm-hmm. So we were trying to interject some fun too, and that's going to take time. That's got culture and changes, but on the same note that Coach Seiler was talking about, from the hitting part, what was something that they kind of looked at you like you had three heads or something?
Yeah. You know, before I get into it, though, I need to give credit to where credit is due. And the Pirates offensive staff from top to bottom, and it also includes even some of our Dutch friends, Martin Nijhoff and Bart Handegraaff.
Absolutely.
The research work that they have done. That tie into it. Again, Dave Turgeon has been such a huge influence on learning and skill acquisition, mm-hmm. and how do we understand this better as coaches, because ultimately that's what the Pirates have been doing, is how do we get our coaches to be the best teachers around to understand how can this apply to each kid. And so just going through that, those guys have worked with us and allowed us to understand this, that when we work in off-balance positions, when we work with these aqua bags, with water sloshing around, it is forcing us to use muscles to control things that we would have never thought of while we're trying to swing a bat. And when they put us into these different situations for our hitters, whether it's heavy bats, heavy baseballs, light bats, these bags, these uneven surfaces, whether it's a disc or even a Bosu ball, these are different forms of solving problems. Mm. And so when we talk about, here's the goal, here's an external focus, but I want you to do it in a weird situation, and I don't want to really tell you why, because I really want you to feel what it's doing, and I want you to figure out the solution. I want you to solve this problem. Then the kids, like we just talked about, are starting to have a little bit of fun. They're thinking we're a little bit cuckoo at first, we're a little bit weird.
Yeah.
But then ultimately, when they get off those drills and they start applying it to their normal regular swing, they're actually starting to have more success now. And that's what's fun. And so is it going to work perfectly every time with every kid, with every drill? But no. That's why you do have a big old box, toolbox full, like you said the other day. We've got a toolbox full of all these different things that we can try. And then ultimately, the kid starts developing a routine that they love to do, and they get to then pick and choose some of these fun drills without maybe even adding in a competition to it, but then warming their body up for the actual regular swing on the field.
You know what I love, what I figured out when talking to you guys, you know, with the Pirates especially, what an eye-opener it is, refreshing, seeing a major league organization be so open-minded and begin to make changes like that because they found things that were better to develop players.
Mm-hmm. Well, guys like, and you have to give credit to Kyle Stark, Larry Broadway, some of the higher-ups that originally got this going, because they said, listen, we do not have money at the big league level to be able to go and spend big money on free agents. So we have to discover and try new things and figure out what is best so that our young kids, as they're growing up, they're going to be equipped and prepared to now get into this big leagues and start doing some damage, knowing that they're going to be facing some of the toughest pitchers and hitters out there.
And when you said variation, you know, obviously all this stuff's going really well. What I like about it too, variation, that's what kids like, right? So it's not, and that makes it interesting and fun for them, as you mentioned.
Keeps them coming back. The boring factor goes away.
And baseball can be a little boring already. So now we add more boring practice.
It is. And that's sometimes as coaches, you get punched in the gut a little bit because you kind of get into routine and it's a little bit easier just to follow the same old stuff every day. Mm-hmm. And then you need that person around you to say, hey, we got to switch this up. Because it keeps guys thinking too. It might be messed up. They might actually mess up a little bit, but that's actually good because that's where the learning happens, is in those messy areas.
And it's so challenging. All the stuff you guys were doing, there's a lot of challenge behind it. One more thing, Corey. So pick one thing that you did that they looked at you kind of like, whoa, you know, and then maybe they came later and asked you to explain it, you know, a little bit more. Was there something?
I mean, talking about the BOSU ball and how you balance with both feet while you're trying to take a swing.
Yeah.
I mean, it literally feels almost like you're on ice and you're trying to take a swing or to make a connection with the ball. That in itself right there is how am I keeping my head still? How am I balancing my lower half? And then how am I still making time to get this barrel on the ball and make a connection? I mean, you're just tying in so many different parts of your body to have to make this solution. And then again, once you get off of that and you get down onto regular ground, oh my, they feel like they are so solid and strong and they're controlling every move. But they did look at me a little sideways when I was doing that. But yeah, I think all of them are just different ways to feel some different moves. And if one feels better for one guy, perfect.
Yeah, but it makes sense. I mean, you know, I remember when I was playing college baseball, the hockey players didn't practice with us because they were playing hockey. And then they come in and all of a sudden they're hitting better than I was. You know, when you said, you know, it's like being on ice. Yeah, they've been on ice for 5 months. Yeah, you know, for them hitting the baseball was easy. You know, it was really easy for them. Let's stay with some of the drills because I'm going to.
Sure.
Let's talk about some other things that you did with some of those guys that might have been. But be interesting to our coaches and parents and players in the U.S. and around the world.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I love talking about as well is the modified games that you can do with your kids. And so you can make them as basic and as simple for really young kids. Again, we want to try to keep it fun, make it interesting, but also work on some of the skills that are used in the game of baseball that you need at any level. You know, throwing, catching, communicating, teamwork, hitting, all those things. So you can make it as basic as possible for the younger kids to be able to get something out of it and still have fun and be working on those skills. And you know, a lot of those modified games you should be and can be using at a higher level, whether it's, you know, high school, college, professional, situational stuff. So I think they really enjoyed the double trouble game that we were talking about. I think they thought that was pretty interesting, especially
that taught team situation game situation.
Like game situations where basically it's something that we do either as like a warm up, you know, kind of get ready to go after dynamic stretching and a primer. You know, we'll say okay, we'll do next 10-15 minutes. We're just going to get this double trouble game in real quick, or you know, maybe at the end of practice where you can make it a competition and have a reward for it or something like that. But basically, it's you're either doing like a short overhand toss or off of a tee if you think that that's better. But you know, you've got your defense out there. The hitter is going to hit the ball and then on a double every time, no matter what they do. Infielder should probably let the ball go into the outfield, even if it's a ground ball. But you know, the idea here is that we're teaching on the offensive side, we're teaching being aggressive out of the box, trying to go two, because as we all know, we don't all play on really nice, pristine fields. Right. Outfielders might get lazy. They may bobble it coming up. They may not go hard after it because they think, oh, it's an easy single. This guy's not going to round the bag hard. So we try to teach be aggressive out of the box, and if we can make a game out of it to make it happen, that's fine. And then, of course, between first and second, we put a cone that says, all right, no matter what, even if the ball's like waiting for you at second base, you got to go past this cone, because now we can have on the defensive side what we're working on is those outfielders being aggressive on the ball, Plus, we're working, if that guy does get caught in between, we're working on rundowns. Mm-hmm. So we're doing a lot of the things that we're going to be doing in games, and we're working on stuff. We're just changing it slightly, the sort of the packaging it comes in, so that they're able to work on stuff that, you know, we don't have to block into just a now we're doing rundowns. Now we're doing whatever. We can actually work sort of in a more integrated fashion and make it fun and interesting and slightly different. And the other thing you can work on as well is, you say, all right, no matter what, you're going to second base, and second baseman, if you're sitting there with the ball waiting for him to come, you just got to wait, and now we're working on tags and sliding and trying to avoid tags and stuff like that.
Fantastic. So. And here, I want to talk about the teaching process, too, because mm-hmm. that seems to be a different twist to it.
Mm-hmm.
When we're working on fundamentals now, give us the framework behind it, you know, where you start and where you end, to make it the full package to be able to compete in towards
the game. Sure. So the way that we do it, and I'm not saying I know this is the right way, this is just the way that
but it was very good here.
Been doing it. So we start with trying to go from simple to complex.
Uh-huh.
And obviously, you know, like Coach Tahan was talking about, you have to know your player and sort of what they need. So, you know, first, before you do any of that, you need to evaluate. You need to evaluate your players and see what they need, and mm-hmm. so that you can kind of tailor individual plans for them. Because what we'll do is we'll start off with, some kind of primer activity, whether it's a trust the glove routine, and we're working just forehands, and then we do just funneling up for the ball in the middle lane, then we're doing just backhands.
A routine that has been done traditionally by most coaches up till now.
Right, and so you start there is to kind of get them, you know, okay, hey, this is what we're doing, this is what we're working on. So you work on block and controlled, and then you go announced different. So now you're announcing forehand, and then you throw it, and then you announce backhand, and you do it. And then maybe you vary no glove, with glove, kneeling, standing, foot under instability pad, right foot under instability pad, and stepping into the baseball. And now we'll do all of those things, but we're not announcing it. So now that they have to make decisions, so we go from simple, blocked, mm-hmm. to complex with variation. And again, the more developed the player or the more skill that they have, the more difficult, the more complex the task is, and including a lot of the decision-making stuff. But the simpler, or the less skill that they've acquired at younger levels, you're just trying to make them like the black belt of the forehand.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe you'll go to a drill where they're doing a decision-making, but you're only working on the forehand. You're trying to go simple to complex, blocked to varied, and random.
Hey, can you start in the middle, or do you have to start at the beginning all the time?
Well,
is there a point where you can just start in the middle because he's pretty good at?
Well, I mean, I don't think that there's like a right only
it's
one way
process,
to do it.
Yeah.
So I mean, you can do, you know, you can do all kinds of things. Like, so let's say there's a time constraint for practice, and you know they should be doing wall ball on their own to be doing some of the block stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, if I say practice starts at 4:00, they should have already done some of that stuff as their own warm up process, so that when I get there at 4:00, we could say, okay, now we're getting into random stuff that we're working on that doesn't have to be, you know, like step one, step two, step three. And so you can kind of pick and choose that.
And one of the drills I saw you do, I want you to mention it because it was mm-hmm. pretty neat, was the one where to get them ready in the ready position before the ball's hit.
Where
they jumped also over.
Sure. So one of the drills is, and actually I got this from some of the Dutch guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
So
shout out to our Dutch buddies.
Yeah.
Martin, how are you, man?
Yeah.
Been on the show before, Martin, and also Bart.
Yeah, they're great guys. And also a shout out to the guys at Florida Baseball Ranch and Texas Baseball Ranch, Randy and Ron, which a lot of the stuff that I was doing, the pitching, was all their stuff.
Absolutely.
As well. So, and I know they're good friends and sponsors of ISG too. So.
Yes.
The drill that I'm talking about is, so you have them, you know, let's say it's a tandem drill where there's a coach or a player working with another guy, and you know, maybe 15 feet, 20 feet away from them. They have their back turned to me, if it's me and a player, so they've got their back turned to me. In front of them, on my side, is some kind of barrier, whether it can be like a row of connection balls or a couple of cones,
mm-hmm.
Anything like that. And when I say go, They're going to jump up and turn around and face me. And as soon as they hit the ground, they're going to be as quick and snappy as they can and as athletic as they can and jump over that barrier. It's not a high barrier. I'm not trying to do a high jump or anything like that, but just to have them jump and be athletic, move towards me. And as they're in the middle of the air, I will call a direction or point, and they will have to then organize themselves in the midair to make that first move towards the direction that I point. At that point, I will then roll or flip, or for an outfielder, let's say, because you know I'm talking all infield stuff.
Yeah, they all got
outfielders
get ready.
Too.
Yep.
Right. So what we do there is you know lob a ball to whatever side it is that I point. And then their body will organize itself in its most effective or efficient way, we hope, but at least they're kind of feeling their way through it, to get to that ball. And what they're talking about now at I know some of the higher levels, is that, and I heard this year at the ABCA, which really got me thinking about all this stuff, is infielders and outfielders, the pre-pitch routine, you actually kind of want to be just off of the ground while the pitch is crossing the plate, because that's how it's easiest to organize that, you know, that false step or whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
To be the quickest to the baseball and have the best reaction to react to whatever happens as a result of that swing.
Absolutely, and it seems like you know you're staying in motion, basically.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not
right.
Stopping at all. You're staying in motion. You're going to be much
motion
faster.
Motion stays in motion.
Yeah,
right?
And a lot faster.
Sure.
Corey,
so.
The game. You know, one of the things in the game that's interesting is that seems to be really changing. Is, and I don't want to misrepresent it, but it seems like we're doing less teaching and letting players figure it out for themselves. Now, without saying there's always going to be some teaching. Where's that line at? That's a fine line. Where do you, as a coach, how do you know when to go and when to stop and when to keep your mouth shut? And
well, it's a tough dynamic, right?
Yeah.
Because the younger coaches, they want to prove themselves that they know stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And how does that come out? It comes out in them talking more. Well, again, through more research and understanding of how the body works, they could care less. And I heard you talking about a lot this weekend, Coach Seiler. The body could care less about the words that you're actually using to get them to do something.
Yeah.
They need to be put in a position to feel something. And then even at times, that's not even the greatest way. But it's still, it's the growth process of our coaches to, and this is a phrase that I've been taught too, to be bold, be brief, and then be gone. And basically, it is, it's a Twitter type mentality of I'm going to stay short, I'm going to give them a few things, but I need them to experience it. And then I'm going to ask questions and I want to get their feedback on what they felt, because I want to hear the words that they used. I want to hear the thoughts that went through their head, so that now if I use some words, it's going to be ones that they actually gave me and I'm not creating the words for them. But the older, more mature coaches still can get into trouble by talking too much, but usually they learn, I want to talk less and give them something, because usually the more mature coaches, hey, they're not trying to prove anything anymore, and they're more secure in themselves, and they understand that, let me give them a phrase and let them take it and run with it. But that's where it's going, and I think you'll find more production from your kids when you keep it simpler, because again, even their minds, they can't process a lot of stuff. You're going to have their attention for maybe 3-5 seconds. I think 8 seconds is maybe even the max what they're talking about right now.
Yeah, I think that's what a goldfish has.
Yes, the goldfish is actually 11 seconds. Right?
11 seconds.
It's a lot longer than
I'm pretty close to the goldfish.
Yeah. So be very intentional with your words, though, and when you're speaking to them, and then boom, let them experience it and do it.
And which means less talking, and they're doing it more too.
They are doing more reps.
Yeah.
And there's stuff on that too about in practice, how often do we actually stop the practice to then address something that went wrong?
Yes.
Well, there's different schools of thought, but the one that we've adapted is we actually will let the error happen a little bit more frequently. Mm. And then once the drill is done, we'll pull them back in, and then we'll remember a couple of those things, but we're going to get feedback from the kids on what they thought was good, what they thought they could have improved on. Mm-hmm. And if they don't bring it up, we'll bring it up and say, hey, what happened in this spot right here? What could have been better? but those that's a majority of, I need to maximize my time, I need to get the reps in, and hopefully they're figuring things out on their own too without me just blurting out what the right answer is immediately.
Absolutely. Hey, let's try something. Let's go through something. Let's take a situation and how you would ask questions. In other words, how you would ask questions to a player, you know, what type of question and what the response might be, and then you're going to ask another question. Can we think of a scenario like that?
Well, first off, I just, as a hitter, I want to know what they feel like or what they're thinking when things are going well.
Okay, great.
And then when things aren't going well, what are they worried about or thinking about? So then I have some original thoughts immediately, what they're processing. But then ultimately I'll, maybe what's something that's you're not very good at, and let's put you in a situation. And maybe I'll put an unbalanced item there and I'll have them try to make connections.
Are they telling you what they're not good at? Or what they feel like they're not good at?
Yeah, I want to ask. I want to see what they're struggling with right now. And if there is something. And then let's maybe go into that. But
what happens if what they feel that they're not good at may not match what your analysis is? How do you work that one? Well, that can't be that easy either.
Sure.
Or maybe it doesn't happen. I don't know.
I think it could be some coach feedback of, hey, I think you think you're going away with the pitch is bad. I think it actually looks pretty good the way you're doing it.
There you go.
And I might even then reemphasize some video with it and show him a couple of things. I don't want to make him reliant on video, but if it's to help prove a point, I'll use it for sure.
How about pitchers? How do you, you know, when they're doing something, it could be in a game situation, it could be in practice. How do you respond, you know, with that asking the question? Or
so, you know, I think the asking of the question about how they feel, not in terms of like, yeah, I feel good or I feel bad, but what did you feel, you know, when you made that pitch, in terms of like, what was the internal conversation with yourself before that and then after that? And because I think one of the things that we don't often address is self-talk. You know, what is the conversation that you're having with yourself? And then addressing some of the things that may be negative, because a lot of self-talk is negative, right? And so they may have like, well, don't throw a ball here, right? Like if the mind doesn't hear the don't part, it just hears throw a ball, right? And so I think the self-talk and equipping them with things that can help them in addressing their own internal conversation. And that's not just for baseball, but that also goes for school and relationships, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, trying to address some of those things. But in terms of, you know, if there's a guy that's missing high arm side, well, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, what is your focal point on making that pitch? Where is it that you have your eyes? What do you, you know, and then take video. I think the video part's a big one as well. If you can show them, like, hey, you might be doing that because, you know, you're landing across your body and you're not able to clear your hips and you're leaving everything kind of up. You're not releasing the ball close to home. You're kind of up near your head with it. So, and then try to do some drills and things to help with that. But.
Not to change the subject, I want to get back to the point, though, too, where Coach Seiler was talking about doing on-field team activities to maximize the game-like reps. And that is a huge part of the team and the kids learning is how many game-like reps can we get into a practice. The other side, too, is how can I actually make it more extreme than what a game is? Because if I can get them facing really nasty angles, really high-velocity stuff, decision-making where they're making decisions faster and better, now it goes into the game. And it slows down for them.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And
that's great.
But at times, you've got to be careful because you might really burst some confidence by pushing it too hard.
That was going to be one of my questions. Well, so now they're failing a lot. How do you address that issue?
Exactly. And we've learned, too, that if it goes beneath the 50% mark of success, so if we're only doing 2 out of 10, 3 out of 10, that's way too hard. You can only have a certain amount of time and reps with that. But if you can get it to a point where they know this, I need to face some extreme if I'm really going to improve because I need to get pushed into that growth area, then they'll buy into it.
Yeah, and not only and those things are awesome, and it's not only, you know, physical things, but it's putting them in situations like they're going to have to react to injustice, right? So you were talking about this as well with an umpire that makes a bad call, or even let's say we've got like a modified game that we're running through, and this team, you are going to use a wood bat and you're down 5 runs. You know, and so put them in that situation so that, you know, you can either complain about it or you're going to have to face that adversity and do everything you can to work through that. And so giving them, equipping them with that kind of relentlessness or the tools to be able to deal with that kind of adversity. Because, you know, in a game, oftentimes we'll say, oh, you know, like suck it up or, you know, toughen up or get over it. But yeah, if you don't work on those things, there's no way for them to have the tools to be equipped to actually deal with those. So, you know, yes, the different angles, the different speeds, the different pitches, the nasty stuff. But also, hey, you know, we're also going to give you, your team, you're using a wood bat and you're down 5 and, you know, we're in the 7th or the 9th, whatever it is. Deal with it. Mm-hmm. You know, like go out there and compete. Let's see what you got.
Folks, man, is this some great stuff or what? The Russians been getting this all weekend. Yeah, I've taken a lot of notes. Matter of fact, we don't even need a host on the show because these guys can just keep rolling. I can sit back and listen to these guys and I'll just see you at the end. These guys are fantastic, man. I got to get into this and I got to ask you both. The Pirates, without giving out trade secrets, because there are some things that, you know, Major League teams don't want to give up because it's, you know, things they're working on makes them, you know, gives them that edge. But some of the things that the Pirates are working on is kind of unique. Something that's unique that with players, that's, you know, give our coaches a little bit of advice that could help our coaches also.
Sure.
And maybe, you know, the Pirates haven't been doing it in the past or other, you've never, you know, coaches haven't heard of it.
I mean, it goes all the way from the assessment that Coach Tyler talked about for what a body can actually do, mm-hmm. and the expectations then that a coach can have of each player. Instead of, if they don't know that their body can't move in a certain way, then how am I going to even be able to get them to do what I want them to do? It starts with that kind of knowledge. But then also, it's vision training. What kind of things are we doing in vision with our eyes? Because you can't hit if you don't have good vision and keep your head still.
That's something you spend time with all your players on.
Yeah, we do. System. And we give them options to train more if they would want. We have some of the best. Bernie Holiday, Tyson Holt, Hector are so many good mental conditioning coaches in our organization. Andy Bass, there are to understand and give them techniques and options to go to when they feel emotional frustration, anxiety, any kind of thing that, again, if you've got a heartbeat, you've probably gone through this stuff. Yeah. And so we're equipping our players with this stuff if they want it. But it's so much more than just the physical on the field, throwing, catching. And again, even the spiritual side, the mind, body, soul, everything's got to play together. And so we have to know our players inside and out, the families that they come from, the upbringing, what matters to them, what's valuable to them, and then who are the influencers in their lives. Because when we understand this, we understand them more as a whole person, and we can then better help them in different ways that if you were just a coach on the outside, just coaching baseball, you wouldn't know.
Well, it's great for a lot of our coaches because, you know, a lot of times we really don't know what the major league teams do behind the scenes. It's great to hear that. And at John Carroll, I mean, you're always looking for the edge, you know, the extra thing to make your team that much better.
Sure.
What maybe some of the things you're working on to help your club even?
So I think there's a couple of things that we're always looking to do and do really well that are going to help us perform on the field. And I think, you know, Coach DeHaan was just mentioning that it sounds like caring about your players is really important. The thing that I tell my guys at the beginning of every year, even if it's just a parent meeting at the beginning of the year, and to reassure the parents, like, look, guys, my job, your job is to love each other. My job is to love you, right? And so mm-hmm. To care for you, to understand who you are, to help you if you struggle. And they got to know that they have each other's backs and support each other. And so when you have a group of people that are going in with a single kind of mission, with a singular vision, and they work for each other, you win more baseball games because culture eats strategy for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Mm-hmm.
And so creating that kind of of care environment where, you know, they want to play for each other, they want to perform for each other, they know they're picking each other up, and if I can help them in developing as young men, that's for me more important than a win on the field. But you know, if you start with that, you're gonna win baseball games. So I think really working on that, as opposed to, hey, I'll see you in February when tryouts are, and then have a good summer. You know, so letting them know that, you know, I'm there for them if I want help working on, you know, infield stuff or pitching stuff, that we can work on that stuff. But ultimately working on the culture piece. But beyond that, like looking into this skill acquisition stuff, that like going down to the skill acquisition summit down at the Florida Baseball Ranch, and trying to use the instability, overhead instability, reading the you know, movement science, like the Franz Bosch stuff, and a lot of the stuff that the Dutch guys are doing. I think that's giving us an edge with player development that a lot of other guys just aren't doing. And I think, you know, sometimes it takes a little bit of time for the guys to buy into it, but if you have the culture where, hey, you know, we're going to give it our best shot, we're going to work, and you can also address individual players and say, well, maybe he's not really interested in the aqua bag stuff, but we're going to try to find other ways that can help, like, because we know the basic underlying science behind it, that can help them grow as players. And I think some of the things that we try to do are a bit non-traditional, you know, in between innings assignments that are non-normative. Catch play that's non-normative.
Such as, give our coaches an idea a little bit.
Sure. So we have in our program, I always mess the innings up because I can't count, but innings one, three, and five, we'll do dry double plays. So third baseman has a ball when he goes out to the field in between innings. Third baseman, shortstop, second baseman, and first baseman all have a ball. First baseman has it in his back pocket. The others have it in their glove. So third baseman will, actually second baseman has it in his pocket too. So third baseman will have to start with the ball in the glove. He's in double play depth. He's gonna pretend like he fields a ground ball and then throw it to the second baseman. He turns a double play. Shortstop's gonna do an at you, ball at you, or towards the bag, and he's either gonna flip it or just a short little, you know, sidearm toss to him, double play. Second baseman's gonna do it at him, open up, or kneel and throw. First baseman's gonna come off the bag, inside, and, you know, say inside, shortstop's gonna turn. Then they get the balls back. Third baseman's gonna go glove hand or backhand, turn a double play. So we're doing dry double plays those innings. Innings two, four, and seven, if that's what it is, I forget. Whatever,
yeah,
it is.
Different
whatever
innings.
It is. I have it written down, so I'm in a dugout. I don't need to think about it. We'll do outfielders are working with the infielders. So right fielder is throwing to the first baseman, and he's working on cuts to home, or he's going to cut like in fake two. He's not actually throwing to home. He's not actually throwing to two, but he's working on his footwork and his transfer. And he's giving the outfielders either ground balls or fly balls, glove side, arm side, straight back over his head, in. So they're working on reads of fly balls and fielding and coming up and making a good throw. Middle infielders are working with the center fielder. Second baseman will throw a fly ball or a ground ball to the center fielder. He's going to come up and throw to the shortstop. Shortstop's either going to pretend like he's cutting three or snap cut two, and then second baseman puts a tag down. Whoever has the ball at that point will then throw it back to the center fielder, ground ball, whatever, and he's going to go straight to second base. Second baseman's going to put the tag down. And so they're doing it. Third baseman's working with the left fielder. Mm-hmm. They're going to vary between either cut, so he's going to throw to the outfielder, arm side, glove side, behind, in front, ground ball, and then he's throwing either to cut for the cut home, or he's going to be at third base working on a tag play. So, you know, the first couple of times you do this, a lot of people look at you like you're crazy.
Sure.
Because they're used to the lazy ground ball from the first baseman.
Right.
And the outfield is just kind of doing nothing. And I mean, for us, that's time that's valuable that we could be learning and growing.
Absolutely.
And these are game-like reps, as close as we can get them, that are going to happen in the game real soon. So we're ready for it.
Especially when you're only playing 30 games in high school and practicing a month and a half before the season.
Right.
You got to find more time where you can get more training, continue that training.
Absolutely.
You know, Pirates are making changes in some areas that non-traditional also. couple ideas, you know, in the minor league system. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned something about hitting ground balls or...
Sure. Yeah. It's, again, we're trying it out. How can we not just do same old, same old?
Yeah.
Can we get some ground balls to our infielders off a fungo guy in the middle of our games? Can we make some throws from the outfield to bases? So it's not just playing catch to warm up. It's actually, how can I make a good one hop throw to a base? Mm-hmm. It's game like reps. And you're constantly priming your body to be ready to make that throw. And so even when you're talking about, too, even the catchers making the throws the first, the third, in different ways, the mm-hmm. second, it's anything we can do to prepare to have success and to put our, and we've got to think outside the box. We're using different objects now to prep our hitters. If they're in the hole or in the on deck circle, it might not always be a weight. It might be an aqua bag that we're trying to stabilize our body and get it activated, which then also allows our body to fire faster and quicker as well.
Hey, you guys found something in the weight, that the weight of the bat of the weight,
mm-hmm.
at the end of the bat isn't really doing what we thought was doing.
Yeah, again, so doing research, the actual weight when we swing an on deck circle, the heavy weight, it makes us feel like, okay, once I take it off, I'm actually swinging a little bit faster. But in all reality, it's only hindering us a little bit as we go up there because we're maximizing energy that we would have been used in that next swing without the weight on. And so these are just some of the little things that as players have habits, we can slowly try to give them evidence to maybe start breaking them of some of these things to hopefully help them. And it, especially if it extends their career or has success, then it helps.
Darren, I mean, you were talking about, I thought it was unique, something about on deck also preparing, not with the weight on the bat, but something else that helps them.
Yeah, so I love the idea of the aqua bags in the hole, so I'm probably going to be trying to find a place to stash that aqua bag from in the dugout so my guys can use it.
I'm sure somebody will say it's illegal.
Yeah, or get some weird looks from people. I don't care about that. But
the banister theory. Remember the 4 minute mile, right? Nobody was going to run 4 minute mile.
Or
the track was too short. They thought, and we're learning a lot.
So one of the things that we've done in the past is basically take like a bat handle, like a sawed off wood bat. Old broken wood bat that you have laying around that's not used for firewood. You just chop it off so that you can just grip it and then put a hook screw in it and then attach it to a chain and then attach that chain to a pole of your fence somewhere near your mm-hmm. if you have a dugout fence or something like a wall, brick wall with a hook in it, you can just attach it to it. And so we'll do some isometric holds. We'll get to basically like front foot strike, power position where you start to rotate the hips. And your elbow will have been, like, I'm just trying to give a visual for the radio.
Absolutely.
And so the elbow would be down near the hip, mm-hmm. basically, like you've slotted your elbow, and your weight is coming from behind. It's not weight, but it's basically a chain to a
resistance,
pole.
Resistance, right?
Yeah, resistance. So you're going to try to, like, feel that tension across your body and do a 3 to 6 second hold and then take a break. 3 to 6 second hold, take a break. 3 to 6 second hold, take a break, and then pick up your bat and do 5 really hard swings. Go through your normal swing, don't rush it, but get up there and give 4 or 5 hard swings. Circumstantial evidence that we have, it's not like a major medical study or anything, but that bat speeds went up. Batted ball distance went up by like 6%. This is information that I first heard about from our strength conditioning coach, Coach Andrew Sachs, did some research on this for us. And we've had that in the on deck circle to try to give guys options, besides just, hey, this is the bat donut, and everybody goes up there and does some weird looking swing. And instead, we're trying to get them primed and ready and supercharged and ready to go up there and be aggressive.
Absolutely. Great stuff, folks. We're going to end it with one more question asking these guys. They've been working all weekend with these coaches, so we're going to give them a little break. The last thing I want to just get into, and coaches love drills, so I want to end it up with a drill each that you did maybe this weekend to help the coaches here in Russia, and then we'll close it off from there.
Yeah, I think the one for me, at least from the hitting side, is how do I hit a breaking ball?
Yeah.
and so again, it's really hard to hit a breaking ball. Yeah, absolutely. And you don't miss the fastball.
I still can't hit one.
No. But I love the one where we do have a short tee at the plate, and you have a short coach pitch throwing, and you make pitches from the coach coming in. When it's in your zone, probably middle up, you're looking to whack and make some noise with it. And when the coach fakes a throw, the hitter is still ready to attack, but now he's got to find a way to hit this low tee ball off the tee. And so it's controlling the body. It's still being ready for the fastball, but now how do I adjust on an off-speed pitch? It's as close to a game-like type situation as you're going to get from a short distance like that.
I love that drill. When I saw that, man, I thought, that is fantastic. I'm not sure how you guys thought about, you know, how you made it up or how you figured that out, but I thought it was a fantastic drill.
Yeah. I think for me, I enjoyed using the throwing sock and the throwing club and teaching them about, you know, these are different implements that you can use because a lot of coaches, they may not have a ton of space, especially if they're like a club in Europe, as we know, that they don't always have all the resources to have a ton of baseballs, a ton of weighted balls, a ton of, you know, like a giant dome to throw in like the Russians have here. But those are things that you can, you know, you can take it if you're traveling, you can use it in your hotel room, and use those implements to work on patterning and throwing stuff without like a big budget and a whole lot of space. So it really opens up access to be able to work on stuff for those coaches and players that are looking to continue working and get better, but may not have like the super big space or the indoor turf facility or whatever it is. You're working on it in your basement, your bedroom, whatever. So kind of equipping those players and those coaches to see that you don't need to have a whole lot of stuff to get a lot of good work done.
All right, folks, there you have it. An awesome show. Guys, I got to thank you. Thanks for the weekend being with you. It was fantastic. Thanks for being on the show, Corey.
And same here, Pete. Thanks for the opportunity.
Thanks, Mr. Seiler.
Thank you, Pete.
I got to call him Mr. Seiler, I think, now.
Hey, Coach Seiler is by far the upper 1% of high school coaches out there. Uh-huh. And so I've got to give him huge props because he's got a bright future ahead of him.
No doubt about it.
If he goes into college or pro ball someday, he would be excellent.
As a matter of fact, hear that, thanks, folks. College baseball and pro baseball, you need to find a spot for this guy. So just get a hold of Baseball Outside the Box. I'm his agent, and we'll handle everything for him. Just kidding. I'm not an agent, but you can always reach us. But we'll have Coach Seiler's and Coach DeHaan's information on the show notes, while their bios, all their Twitter, you know, usual, as we put up there. So, again, fantastic. Special thanks again to both these guys. Also to the Lineup Media Group, our producer, Brian Kroc. Thank you to ISG for allowing us to be here in Russia to work with these coaches. Thanks to the Russian Baseball Federation, our buddy Dima, the president. He is awesome. We hope to continue working with them for many, many years. And thanks especially to all our listeners. Without you, we have no show. So continue to listen. Hopefully you're learning more and spread the show on your social media, all your baseball friends. We'd love to get the show out to as many people as possible. So folks, this is Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, Moscow, Russia, heading home in the next couple days. Thank you. Hey, have a great coaching day, and we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.